May 19, 1982, Long Beach, California. Saul Alexander, interviewed by Kerry Beaver.
Do you want to talk about Mr. Campbell and his recreation?
I originally met Jerry Campbell, Cleveland was his name, when he was with the Lamar Gasoline Company on Orange Avenue. It's a natural gasoline processing plant. I didn't know him well in those early years, but he was really one of the founders, but he was a gas engineer, and at a minimum, he was one of the top men in the operation. Probably to the extent that when the present, the Petrolane Company of the world, the financial mile complex and industrial complex, when it was established, I'm quite sure that Julian was one of the founders of that company, because he had considerable stock in it, I know. And something he directly told me years, many years later. He wasn't actually employed with Petrolane. He had been employed officer, I believe, at the New York Gasoline Company. But I can't remember the actual years, but probably in the mid or late 40s, he had invented several mechanisms for refinery operation, having been in a partial refining situation, at least a natural gas engine. The only one I remember very vividly, because we at Central Oil at the time, I know, bought the system. That was a boiler alarm system that he invented. He hadn't invented mine, too. Very much an individualist. He wasn't the easiest man to be a close friend. But gradually, somehow, everything would change. I used to stop by Waterman's Steam Shop on about Lime and Northwest Corner, I think of Lime and Brother Road. I don't recall it. They had a name to the company. There was some operating title to it. But I used to drop in there, and even if he's busy, he's very often. He might keep on working it if he's fiddling around. Otherwise, he'd want to talk first, he would get back in his little office there. And he manufactured these refinery gadgets that he invented. The market of them very successfully. And when he eventually went together with him and financed the drilling of the hole in the donut down there, the recreation park sugar heap. Yeah, I know it's fairly well that it's sugar long beach. So I was partially involved there. I'd been senators, and here as I just had a golden needle refining company, purchasing exchanging oil. So I began to thing I liked about purchase the crude, and when he successfully was about to bring in the first well, he had to finally make a decision, and so far I just can't give you all the crude, but he said, I want to give you some if you can work with it, and he said, it's going to have to be under a pipeline, because I'm going to allow trucking out of here, and Mobil Oil says they can get in the Tidewater's line from here, and they want the oil. But make a long story short, finally the ultimate thing is I did get 25% of the bill, but I had to pay out 25% of the connection and running the line down to the the track, the paddler line was along the PEOP track right away there. So he gave me 25% of it, and they paid 25% of our share of the cost and maintenance of the line. So they were pretty good little wells down there. They were not cheap to drill, but I think they were profitable. So it's the present price, you know. And but one of the things that some people were remembering for some adversity, some very positively, is that when our pin-headed council, maybe not, I shouldn't use that term, but I thought they were going far beyond their prerogatives by the council and allowing eventually, not while he was ready, but eventually allowing fluoride to be put in our local water supply. The fluoride, you know, is a waste byproduct of aluminum manufacturing. And it no doubt good for calcium, good for your teeth, but it isn't good for your stomach. And William Campbell took on this burden personally to fight the thing every time a city or municipality would be involved in maybe considering putting fluoride in the water, he'd fight it. And he was so imbued with the unfairness and the impracticality of it for as a general population. Now we know it's good for peace. And they say, well, it's good for your children's peace. That's fine. Well, let them put it in free space, and that's fine. Or in their own water if they want to. But why should universally all of us have to take that into our system? I don't think Long Beach water. You never see me drink water. I keep bottle washing. Anyway, we thought that so much so, for a long time, or for some time, we had a billboard on 9th Avenue that he was running space on. Do you recall that? And somehow they subverted his position there. And his lease ran out of his contract, and they wouldn't accept his business anymore for the subject matter he wanted on there. So what did he do but buy the property out from under them and built his own golf course? And he continued on. That's how sincere he wasn't about falling through with it. And he was a good friend of mine. I was an honorary pallbearer at his funeral down at that time, the First Presbyterian Church. David Burton's son is or was the minister there, was the minister at the time. And he, shortly before he died, a year or two or three before I know, he sold his stock out of Petrol and I remember. I said, well, Julian, I said, why would you sell your stock out of a company like that? They've been successful. Growing like it is, and the cash flow was so terrific, they were buying into many other productive industries and businesses. And as they finally said, my ordinary income, I just can't accumulate the money because of taxes, and I have to take it on long-term capital gains, because that's why I sold it. He said, it's a good stock, and it'll be better, he said, but to do what I want to do, I have to turn money over on long-term capital gains. At that time, he was in the 90% bracket. And he was, of course, I remember him as a lot of fond remembrances of our associations the business, I think he left to his employees, and they're still active, I think upon Olive Street, I believe on the west side of Olive Street, south of Wardlow. They're still active there, and he still got to the employees at that point. And of course, he drilled a well down there successfully, and I don't know what position that's in now with ownership, but they call it the Herbell Exploration Company.
Who is Herbell?
That was a combination of Keith Herder, who was his partner, he was a drilling and drilling contractor. And he was involved with a drilling rig. And Campbell, the end of his name and the first part of Keith Herder's name. Keith and his son, I think his son's still very active. And that was another one who was aware of it too. Not Keith Herder, but his son. I couldn't imagine that. Bill Herder, terrific, he just grew up in the Alabama under his dad, and terrific worker and the other part possible and everything about it. But he was, when I met him, he was a man in his early or middle 20s. I couldn't imagine a child of that age not being a lizard. I think he, subsequent to that, the last 15, 20 years, he may have corrected that. He probably had to, because he's out and hustling on his own a lot now, and probably, you know, his name has improved some on it, but he's good, he's successful. Everybody, his services are in demand if he's there for you, because he's a knowledgeable fellow.
How did you get by?
Huh?
How did he get by if he couldn't read and write?
Well, that's a good question. All he did was, well, he knew machinery, knew about drilling, downhole conditions. He was a good bit, you might say, equipment man. He knew what was good, what wasn't, when he started services, and he knew where to buy it and when, and so all he does is trade and deal and physically perform tasks around supplying the operation and all, but he really, he might have been able to write his name. I suspect he could have. So I didn't know that till after I'd been acquainted with him a year or two, I don't know how I found it out accidentally. Something I had given him to read or something. What was it, a contract or something? And tells me when he saw it, he turned it over to his father. And then through that, I found out he couldn't read. You can't imagine, this was back in the 50s. Kind of long, man. Yes, it had to be after 58, because I went with Grenada about that time. So it had to be in the late 50s, early 60s when they did that. Yeah, well, they were a very successful company, operated by the Gardner family and Sid Johnson, an individual. And I knew more about Sid's background because of subsequent talks with other people who had known him up in San Joaquin Valley. He was active up there in the early boom days up there. I think 1910 to 1415. until it started booming down south and he moved down here to end. How he got hooked up to Dabney, I don't know, but I think they drilled at least 125 wells. I believe my profile on Murphy's Fish might have mentioned how active they were, because Murph was one of the top great creatures for the seeking tenants. They had so many rigs on, they had to have, I think there were four or five top seeking tenants besides two fishes and all the other personnel. They were the biggest on the hill, very successful. And as I told you at length, I didn't know it for subsequent years, but Sid was an illiterate. But he was successful. Finally, he taught to write his name, because when he actually got into the business, he did have to find things. But everybody else had to read things for him. And wonderful man, wrote as good as John, perfect man, good answer. But they all loved it. But the most effective people hard work, and I guess that's how he did it. The only way I know. They eventually provided their assets, and they had purchased, as I told you, some of the properties they built on their own in sea. And in later years, the BBM people in particular have gone into the building of rentals, industrial rentals, industrial properties, especially on the southeast slope of the hill, where they have quite a bit of sea property. The BBM, as they call it now, remains of just one well on Signal Hill. I located that for you on 29th Street west of Atlantic. And the R.S. Johnson part is still two or three wells of three or four small ones on the west side of the field. But the areas and the signs, I think, still out there, very small amount of production. We also had, the Dabneys had, a substantial interest in the Ventura out there, which I think was composed of mostly land or leasing, probably, I think, royalty that they had up there.
Before,
you said that when you were a signal, you were a consultant for
Signal Oil and Gas, there was
something about a suit with Western Airlines? No, that was the Union Oil Company.
It's the Union.
Yes, for a year and a half I had a consulting contract with Dutch Lutcher, Frank Lutcher, who I met in the early days on Signal, 1928. He was an operator in number two plant, I told you, and he later became president of the company. We had off and on, seen on that end, were good friends, because we made friendship early and stayed that way. He became head of the company in the middle or late 60s or so, and I did a job for him for a year and a half. The one that involved a lawsuit was Union Oil Company. And after one of them, I came back from South America in February of 76. I'd had a call from Union Oil Company, wanted to meet with me about taking on a controlling job. I'm not willing, and the Lifeline Securing Club, there are three or four of them now, an attorney and a couple of accountants, and then a chief supply and exchange man, Lynn Kelleher, who I knew quite well. So I know if I would do a quarterly report for them on Sitting Hill, and I said, well, that doesn't involve. Well, the government had finally, got into this complicated thing of having three different categories of prices for crude, for one thing. It made the, it had to do with the report, had to do with the preparing of it. And that was there were three categories. They wanted a quarterly report of a Sitting Hill production by company, by individual company, and later on including the units that came into the equation later. The price category they were in, and the amount of barrels produced per month or per quarter, I had to analyze it. Put it together for quality report. Number of wells producing, number of wells idle, daily production, monthly production, quarterly production, all that. And the category, price category that that crude was involved. Well, at first I didn't know why they wanted it. And long as what I was doing for them, I told them at the meeting, did not conflict with my, at that time, business of supplying oil to small refineries and buying from small independents, didn't conflict that, doing that work for them, didn't conflict with that, alright, but otherwise I wouldn't do it. It didn't mean that much to me, but it had no admirable part in it at all. So I agreed to do it. Maybe tell you that, and I didn't know till later that it did involve the reason they wanted to report was a lawsuit with Western Airlines. Because when we finally terminated, I think I covered a little over 2 years of production. In the time I began, I had to go back a year or so, and then 6 or 8 months, I don't know how much, in advance of 76. So then they said, well, we hope you'll be prepared to be in town. And all first they said they want a Western Airlines River Council want to take your deposition. So apparently, the lawsuit was conjured up part of Western Airlines alleging that UNOIL had overcharged them on the jet fuel. But primarily, the reason they wanted to report was the basis for the cost of crude, that the throughput and the part attributable to the manufacturer of jet fuel. And Western Airlines alleged they overcharged them to the extent of $60 million. So I went to the office two successive days of them. I mean, 4 days was about 10-hour session with my deposition. Because I would have been, I guess, the main witness. And so they really worked me over the cold, but I survived all right. And so then they advised me to be sure to be around about May of that year, because that's about when they anticipated the trial to take place. I never did hear from him. Never went to trial, but I don't know how long after that. It must have been almost a year, maybe 8 or 10 months. In I prepared in the Los Angeles Times that they had settled the suit for $10 million. Okay. I talked to Fred Hartley, who's president of the union, one of the parties, and at that time he was all ready to go to court because they can't win that suit, so he said. But apparently he was finally advised to go to that attempt, which they did.
How did you compile a report like that? Is all of
something
that is coming from
what?
The production of
World War II? Yes, well, the division of World War II, everybody reports to them, and it's published interchangeably in that Conservation Committee monthly report I loaned you. You can find all that in there. And that's the, with my reference to it. Except, there was an exception to that. Now, I remember I had to ask a legalist whether he wanted me to proceed. I said, I may not be doing a complete reporting on this. And he said, well, why aren't you? I said, well, I said, there are some producers that just apparently haven't been reporting to the original on that. At least they don't appear in the reference list I have. And I said, I know all of them, and I know approximately within 20% at least of what the wells are doing without them even telling me. But for years I bought the trees, and I know about their decline. And I said, would you want me to report that? Well, he said, let's call you on the phone and tell you later. And we'll advise you. Well, they called me just a few days later and said, go ahead and do it and make a separate sheet out of it, make a separate report out of it, which I did. And, kept it up to date from there on out to almost who had not reported. Now, either they weren't reporting or they were so late in reporting it wasn't appearing in my reference for it. And I never did have on those producers any record that was appearing in the Conservation Committee report, California Oil Production, that years ago had been approved an interchange of information between the Division of Oil and Gas and the Conservation Committee. For a long time, they disallowed that, but finally it was approved, I guess, by the Antitrust Department or some division of the government. I thought they were getting orders into everything. And anyway, so that was interchangeable. There wasn't any. They were reporting wasn't any excuse for it not appearing in that.
Okay. I guess I was curious because I told one of the people I'm working with what you said about Jim Hurley's well, and you seem to quote exact figures for, you know, how much production had increased after the wide flood across the system as well. But then when you talked about people who drilled recently by Colorado
Lagoon.
You said you didn't know how much their wells
produced. That was Dan Elliott.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if that's producing. And he was supposedly not getting out any information. But that won't be a secret too long because they'll probably start showing up. I'm generally 4 to 5 months behind on these monthly reports are only 4 or 5 months behind the current. And I don't know yet unless it's starting to appear in there now. If he's reporting it rather, because you can't keep it a secret too long, but Apparently he's going to do some more drilling down there, according to Scott's sheet. And I talked to him, so... Well, I was getting him, trying to get in touch with him about something, do a favor for some young couple that's been talking about going in one of the partnership drilling programs, and I told him to stay out of it until I found out. It was in Oklahoma until I talked to some people I knew.